Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and welcome to a special post-election edition of Brain Trust Live. Hey guys.
Well,
we wanted to do a special midweek podcast because obviously
we had to.
The bottom fell out.
That's one way
America's bottom has fallen out. God.
Oh, we're only laughing because it's sad.
Well, I haven't yet reached the point. Like, I am not yet sad. I have gone through. I spent a day and a half in like just shock.
Shell shock. I know. That's how I was too. Everybody kept asking me if I had cried yet, and I'm like, I can't stay on. I can't stay on one thought long enough to feel just, it.
No, you know? Exactly.
It was like,
oh, I didn't have any feelings. Like, it wasn't even that I was unfocused. I was very focused. I know
feeling,
how bad it is.
I feeling bad that I hadn't cried. I still haven't.
Well, it's like when someone dies cried, and then people are like, have you cried? And you're like, no, I haven't cried. Stop asking me if I cried. It's sad enough without
right.
you demanding I cry. You're not helping. But yeah, and then today I kind of like, I still think I'm partially in shock, but I've moved past that to just like very focused anger. So that's the next, that's the stage I'm at currently.
Actually, that was my actual first step, as you may have known, because I was texting you and emailing you a lot of rage things on Tuesday night leading into Wednesday morning. That was my,
leave it
to me to cope
I needed that,
tragedy
though, because everyone around
anger
everyone
issues.
Around me was crying, and I was like, I can't cry. What?
Right.
And then I was like, Brent knows. Brent's texting me about how everyone should be real happy with themselves
now. Also, everybody kept saying that they didn't sleep that night, and
I didn't sleep at all.
I didn't sleep on Monday night, I think, due to anxiety about what was happening on Tuesday night. So, like, Tuesday night, I was like, God, I'm really tired. And it was like 10 o'clock, and so I just went to bed. It was like the only thing. I was like, what do I do? Do I sit here and stare at CNN for the next 6 hours? Do I just fucking go to bed? And so I went to bed.
You didn't miss anything, except the end of the world. You missed nothing.
Exactly.
But so now that we've had a couple of days to process, there were some people that podcasted the next day and I don't know how they did it.
I don't either.
Yesterday, I didn't have any thoughts. I have too many today, so that's going to be a problem. But yesterday, I was thought-free.
Yeah, this
entirely.
Is like going to be like a very stream of conscious podcast.
Yeah.
We have like some vague notes in front of us, but not really.
We don't have any. And it's going to involve zero to one fact. Basically. Like, there might be one fact in here somewhere.
This is a feelings podcast.
This is a feelings podcast.
Yeah.
Now that we finally have them. The first thing that I think we should talk about is that, as we all know, turnout was like super depressed in this race. This was something that we were very concerned about.
Yeah. And one thing that I have been attempting to nip in the bud as
this
much
third party
as possible,
rumor.
Although I have been careful to be doing this just because I feel like thing that I have found is that even things that I have liked on Facebook have, like, I had a friend, I liked something on Facebook last night that was like a Bernie Sanders quote talking about like how we needed to elect a populist in this election from like a year and a half ago or else we would lose. And somebody posted that and I liked it. And one of my friends took a screenshot of it and texted it to me and was like, congratulations, ? And I was like, okay. Everyone's really mad, so I've been trying to watch myself.
I have been liking everything on Facebook, which is the alternate strategy. I'm burying people in likes, so no one even knows what I'm up to. I'm up to everything.
But one thing that I have sort of like had to pull myself back from is this notion that Gary Johnson and Jill Stein did this, and that is just not reality.
I saw that getting posted even before the race got called on Facebook. I saw people talking about it at work. That's the one thing that I lose my shit about every time.
Yeah. Jill Stein and Gary Johnson both did very poorly, actually. They underperformed from the polls. Granted, all the polls were wrong, as we know now.
Who the fuck knows what was going on?
Who knows? But also, you know, at least in Wisconsin, I know, the turnout was down almost 250,000 people. Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, between the two of them, just slipped past 100,000 votes.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if that was consistent everywhere, but I do know that if you give every single one of Jill Stein's votes to Hillary Clinton, she doesn't get to 270.
Yeah.
And all of the Gary Johnson votes,
I wouldn't
weren't
imagine
Hillary
those
votes.
Are Hillary
I
votes.
I wouldn't think
no,
that
exactly.
very many of them were.
This is
so
just,
that is
this
if
is something
you,
that in the aftermath, like if you're wondering about how best to cope with this news, I feel like this is the kind of argument that only incites rage. And among the people who are already enraged like you.
Yeah.
Like, this this argument has to stop being the way that Democrats do politics.
Yeah, for sure.
It is unacceptable to me. It's totally undemocratic. I mean, for sure. And it gets to the reason I bring it up is because I think it gets to the sort of like problem that I'm so frustrated with that I think is kind of part of the base of this. And I have other thoughts about what's at the base of this that I'm going to get to. Yeah. But I think the notion that your vote is owed to anyone is not helpful to the party. I'm sure that it's helpful to the, you know, I'm sure that it's a fun talking point to have.
Sure.
Because it gives you a moral high ground to be in.
Yeah.
To be on. But it is not helpful to the party. That idea is why no one fucking showed up. And the real story here
Well, it's
is
one
that,
of the reasons why nobody showed up.
I mean, but yes, like, I mean, that's the real story here is that no one showed up. The story has nothing to do with third party voters.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to do with Trump voters that much. They didn't fucking show up in the numbers that they did for other candidates either. His turnout was depressed, but our turnout was really depressed.
Yeah.
And it's not because people should have gotten excited about a candidate that they didn't feel excited about. It's because we have a responsibility as a party to excite people with our candidate choice.
Yeah.
And we weren't reflecting what people were looking for. It is just like that realization has been like, I've had two realizations. One is that, the other is that Trump is like an amalgam of Michael Bloomberg and Rudy Giuliani. That because of that, we're now going to be living in an America governed by all of New York City's most ridiculous mayors.
I know.
So I don't feel good about that. But I also feel like maybe my initial shock and lack of like pure panic, because everyone else just like panicked for days.
You've lived this before.
And I was like, I see what's happening here. It's not great.
No,
it's but I'm not surprised.
Great. No,
I, like nothing is going to shock me the way that it shocks America.
Well, that was, I mean, that was the other thing that I was, I mean, I was shocked about this, obviously, because the polls were so wrong. So, you know, we said just on the last podcast, we were like, well, Hillary's going to win because math, but the math was wrong.
I feel so stupid that we got sucked into that narrative after we had been so conscious of how wrong it was this whole time.
Right. Well, and
I'm very angry at myself.
But I think like when
being pulled into,
you know,
it.
But the one thing that we didn't want to get caught up in is what the Republicans got caught up in the last time, which was claiming that all of the polling was wrong.
Yeah.
And so why would we go around declaring the polling was wrong when there would be no evidence that the polling would be wrong? Because it hasn't been wrong.
Exactly.
So,
it had been wrong. There were plenty of examples of it being wrong. And those examples included Republican polling from the last election that was wrong.
Well, right.
It was just, it was wrong in almost the same ways, just sort of like the opposite.
Yes, exactly.
And that was something I believed like, okay, the one thing we know about polls is they often underreport, you know, minority voters. Like there are these pockets of people that they underreport. And I think that that didn't happen, A, because the, you know, Voting Rights Act got gutted. So there wasn't a possibility of there being great turnout in a lot of communities that would have shown up for Clinton if it was physically possible with a polling place nearby.
Yeah.
And then, but that doesn't account for the whole drop. The
point I was at least attempting to make before I started talking about all of the polls was that that was sort of like the initial shock. But then after that initial shock wore off, it all made perfect fucking sense.
Like once I saw the full map, I was like, oh, this is the map we predicted in 2013, unfortunately.
Right. I know.
We're not happy about that, guys.
No, we're not.
This has been like watching a slow motion car wreck. And from the point of view of people who were very avid Bernie fans and knew how terrible Trump was in the process and saw the rising threat of Trump in realistic terms, because we understood the populist sentiment that was in the air this year. And I have to say, I had another realization today, which was the only reason we were able to understand that is because Brent fucking reads the Drudge Report.
I know.
I'm going to start to do too, because the only reason I had my finger on the pulse is because Brent was reading alt-right media. And so he knew things that I didn't know about how the rest of the country was feeling.
Yeah, I think at least you're partially right about that. And I think that that is one of the problems with sort of, you know, cutting yourself off from that.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
in an echo chamber.
More than it even being a media failure, it was just sort of like a failure.
Totally.
We just siloed ourselves. We were all looking for the media, but we weren't finding it.
Yeah. So it was here.
It was here.
We were giving it to you.
But I mean, watching this happen in slow motion has been difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that the sort of like having identified that there was this populist undercurrent long time ago, it was very hard once I finally looked at the map to like live with my thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't believe how accurately it reflected everything right. that we had been saying.
And this is what Lyle and I really sort of like want to get to the heart of, I think, is because, you know, a lot of people are for good reason upset. We are upset,
yeah.
obviously. But, you know, we want to try and figure out how we got to this point and what we can do to fix it. There's been, yeah. you and I were talking earlier today, we don't exactly know how yet. I mean, no. you know, we've been seeing a lot of things where people posting like, here's what you can do. And it's, you know, volunteering to help immigrants and it's to give money to Planned Parenthood. And yes, to all of those things.
Right.
Like,
do everything.
Don't not be doing those things. But like, also like, if we want to not have this be happening again, we got to get to the real root of this. And it's beyond, it's even beyond turnout. It's beyond, I mean, it's yeah. like, it's no, it's really sort of like what was at the core of this. And I have some thoughts about it. And I don't really know that there are a lot of probably mainstream Democrats that are ready nope. to hear them yet. Because
no, I know.
Anytime you see them on Facebook, you're usually getting a lot of pushback. But I mean, yeah. you know, a lot of people are blaming this on sexism and, you know, xenophobia and racism. And they're that. Yes, sure.
Certainly, but at least certainly, every single Trump voter went to the polls knowing, comfortable with a white supremacist right. state.
You know, but when you that's looked true. At when you looked at least specifically, you know, I know that they were doing this was in Wisconsin, but it probably was also in parts of Michigan and parts of Pennsylvania. You know, huge areas of that state that voted for Obama in 2012, mm-hmm. voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and they didn't just recently decide that they were racist.
No.
So something.
So there's more. So
there's more.
And also, Trump killed it with union households. He killed it in demographics that are our traditional strongholds.
And that should have been a no-brainer a year ago when you had him running against these trade deals and you propped up a candidate who was, we said that at least a year ago, that it was going to be fascinating to see how union households voted if it was Hillary versus Donald Trump.
And
I mean,
it was fascinating in the wrong way.
It was fascinating because it was tied.
Yeah.
Basically, it was like 47 to 45.
And the Democrats lost strongholds that they have had for decades.
Well, they haven't lost Wisconsin. And I think in Pennsylvania. They haven't lost either of those two places in a really long time.
No, exactly. And this, you know, there are several divides that are contributing to this. And one is urban versus rural, for
sure. 100%.
Because if you look at the country as it voted by district, It's a sea of red with pockets of you can find out where all of America's major cities are because they're pockets of blue in seas of red where seven people live in giant spaces.
Well, and that's the part of the reason why I think that people in those areas have had an easy time voting for Donald Trump knowing that he was a racist.
Yes.
Or at least stoking racist fears because they while they may themselves not have those same feelings, they also because they live in rural areas, they don't know what a Trump presidency means for a person of color.
Yes.
Or they don't know what a Trump presidency means for a person who is
or like
gay
literally
or lesbian,
a person who lives near other people.
Right, exactly. Like, because they, as people who live in rural areas of Wisconsin, don't have the ability to know those things. And on some degree, it's not their fault. I'm not trying to give them, I'm not giving them a pass.
No, of course. But it's also, you've got to work with the reality of people's limitations as a politician and you have to figure out how to bridge them.
Right.
And we didn't figure out how to bridge that one.
I mean, she didn't even go.
I mean, she didn't even try.
She lost the primary to Bernie Sanders and then didn't bother to go back.
Exactly. And, you know, I think, you know, there's the issue of land having more votes than people in this country. The Electoral College makes it so that large swaths of open land get a bigger say in the election than people who all live in places near other people.
Right.
So, like, that's a problem, certainly. But we can't, you know, the Electoral College bites us in the ass all the time, and we never fix it. And that's sort of, it's a solution in the sort of long-term goal sense, but it's not how we fix this current situation.
Right.
There's a lot of hand-wringing going on in the media right now about how they missed this.
Yeah.
And I personally don't understand how they missed it because we didn't miss it and we're just two idiots in LA.
Right, like, exactly.
And by the way, you know, they kept going on. I've been reading a lot of pieces about why media thinks they missed it and they were all like, we were living in a bubble. Brett and I live in the biggest fucking bubble on earth.
There's no
We live in West
bubble.
Hollywood.
We
live in a community that's almost entirely gay and Russian. that's like the craziest nonsense on earth.
Yeah, and we work in entertainment. I mean,
and
there's
I am
no
from Chelsea. I'm from the West Hollywood of New York. I've spent my whole life living in gay bubbles.
There's no reason that you and I should have known and others wouldn't
have. It was easy to find out inside the bubble even. That infuriates me. But I also need to think, you know, we can't control what Republicans do or say. We are not Republicans. We are not members of their coalition. Brent and I don't live near the parts of the country that they attract voters in for the most part. I don't personally know many Republicans. I think a lot of the time when we talk about how we're going to, you know, reach out to people or whatever, I'm often like, I don't know these people. I don't know how to reach out to them. But I think that we can control what we do as Democrats.
Yes.
And we have to admit to ourselves that we excluded and overlooked a lot of people in our process to find our candidate. And I'm not just talking about Sanders voters. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about here.
No.
Because Sanders voters had a voice and it didn't necessarily become the voice, but it contributed to the discussion.
It did. Constructively.
It got suppressed, but we ended up with a platform that was pretty progressive. There were things that we got out of that.
Yeah.
I'm saying, though, something much more controversial.
Well.
So get ready. The Clinton Democrats have been really good at certain baits and switches. So they are really good at kind of talking the talk on certain issues that distract us from the fact that they're not walking the walk on the other issues.
Right.
And in this situation, they were, you know, Hillary was quite vocally supportive of a lot of social progressivism.
Yes.
You know, and how could you not be?
Yes.
It's like at this point, it's too insane to not be.
Yeah. And those are real issues in people's lives.
Those are real issues.
And those
important.
Are issues
we
that
finally
Democrats...
are starting discussions that we should have had decades ago.
Totally.
You know, like.
So she wasn't wrong to address them.
Of course not. But the cornerstone of the Democratic Party in the sort of New Deal era.
Yes.
Has always been economic progressivism.
Yes.
Because that is
and
the
being
issue.
The party of the workers.
That is the issue that unites these rural, angry white people with everyone else.
Yeah.
With all of the other people that they're trampling upon by, you know, not necessarily even intentionally, but but they are part of a system. They are contributing to a system that is racist and sexist and discriminatory in many ways. But that is the issue that we all share. That's important to all of us because most of us are not rich.
Right. Exactly.
Most of us are not the 1%.
And we have always been the party that has.
And we are the party of the 99%. We're supposed to. I mean, that
supposed
is
supposed to be.
We're, that
we
was
have,
what
we have turned into not.
But
that
so
party.
What we did. Was we kept our social progressivism, which is great because that it was a long fight to get us to the point of being socially progressive as well as economically progressive. That was not, we didn't start as the party of social progressivism.
Sure
we
didn't.
Started as a party of economic progressivism and we moved towards social progressivism.
Yeah.
But the thing is you have to have both.
Yes.
Because otherwise those people who lived in Rust Belt towns that where they saw their whole livelihoods and their whole city just like crumble to the ground where, you know, whose children are heroin addicts and who, you know, feel like they were abandoned. Are they as poor as the poorest people of color in this country? No, not at all. Are they facing any sort of like larger discrimination in the way that like women and people of color do just in our everyday lives?
But are they worried about feeding their families?
Yes.
They are. Yes.
And
we used to speak to them.
We used to care about that.
And we don't anymore. And I think that we nominated a candidate.
Who couldn't.
Who has no history of having done so. And also, beyond not even having a history of having done so, was married to the person who many of these people probably blame for the start of this. And rightly so, to a large degree.
No, I mean, and that's... But like, so the thing that I think ultimately we have to remember... is the same forces that stoke racial resentment in this country and stoke the sort of continuing misogyny and stoke discrimination against literally anyone who's not like everyone else.
Yeah.
Stoke class resentments as well. And we can't disconnect those two.
No.
These people are cogs in the same machine as us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think as much as it is very disconcerting that they, many of them, were so comfortable voting for a candidate.
It's who beyond. That's why everybody
is
that's why
this racist
so
and sexist.
Right,
I mean, it is right to be concerned about that.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that we have to address our failure in protecting these people from needing the racism and needing the misogyny feel like they were getting their say.
Well,
because they did it. They got my attention.
Right.
They have my attention
and
now.
And that, again,
you know, like,
is why. And that. What you just said right there, I think, is why so many people on the left woke up on Wednesday morning and while were furious and angry and terrified, also sort of felt fairly emboldened because we feel like on the left and as Bernie supporters, or even if you weren't a Bernie supporter, but if you were just someone who considers themselves
left,
a progressive, felt like we had the chance to be speaking to those people.
Yeah, we did. Bernie Sanders spoke to those people.
And we and that is why we could have had many of those white voters who chose Trump and were comfortable with the racism. We could have had them vote for us, and they wouldn't have had to worry about whether they were comfortable with racism or not.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you don't need the racism, you don't need it.
No.
Like, these
people were worried about their pocketbook. It had nothing to do with...
Yeah, and, I think that we sort of... In this race, the social progressivism, the reason you're hearing everyone get so angry about political correctness, by the way, is just being, like, decent to people. It's right. not, like, some sort of, like, you know, authoritarian, like, right. crazy demand. Like, it's just being decent.
Yeah.
We don't need to be interpreting it as, like, some sort of...
right.
I understand how it oftentimes feels like an invisible rule book that you don't have, that you're, yeah. like, trying to navigate. I get it.
That's because you just... Should be trying to not be an asshole to people.
You didn't necessarily get to grow up being decent to people. Right, most of us, like many of us don't. That's right. Many of us, if you didn't grow up with some sort of latent racism, you grew up with some sort of latent misogyny. I mean, you grew up with something.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So that is, I think, a misinterpretation of what political correctness as a concept was supposed to address.
Yeah.
But in this race, the social progressivism felt like an insincere attempt to grab voters who didn't endorse the economic agenda
yep.
that we were working towards. And the voters that didn't have any skin in the game on the social progressivism were just like,
didn't
what's
care.
Here for me?
Exactly.
And you know what? I can't blame
them. No, I can
blame them for being willing to completely dismiss the rantings of a madman.
Yes.
I mean, I'm angry at them about that. And yeah. to be fair...
I mean, they didn't vote for a good candidate.
No, I don't think, you know, a lot of this is a rejection not just of pluralism. It's a rejection of white elites. And
yes.
and Brent and I are part of that class, that we're not elite in the sense that we're like wealthy right. or well connected, but we represent the thing that they're angry at the most.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the problem. And they had a responsibility to get to know us the way we had a responsibility to get to know them. I'm not suggesting that all of this work belonged to us. I am suggesting that it might that we might have to be the bigger people here
sure.
at the moment. But I mean, I do think that they also had a responsibility to understand that we had shared goals.
Yeah.
And to alert us to that fact.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So that's a failure on all of our parts.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't continue to run candidates who don't have a platform that speaks to something for all of us.
Yes,
The economic progressivism right. is the thing that speaks to everyone.
Yeah.
And we can't educate these right. people about why the other issues are important if we're not speaking to them.
Yeah.
You know, those issues have to come in addition to something.
Totally.
Because the bigger, like a bigger problem that doesn't affect you is just not as important to you as a small problem that does. So our... white rural voters facing everyday discrimination in their lives in the way that black people in America have for all of time?
No. Yeah, no.
Absolutely not. Are they being excluded from, you know, the same institutions that people of color have been excluded from? Are they being like, no, of course not. But with that said, their problems are still real to them. And their problems are still real problems, even if they're not as serious as other people's problems. And we can talk to all of it. We can yes. speak to all of it.
Yeah.
It used to be in our, you know, it used to be part of our principles that we were able to speak to working class people.
Yeah, that was it.
And then, you know, we stood idly by while unions disappeared, essentially.
Disappeared.
And they didn't have to. We allowed, you know.
Became the party of big business. Became the party of outsourcing.
We literally stole that from the Republicans. That used to be what the Republican Party was. And yep. we took that mantle back from them.
Yeah.
And this
and
has been
granted, it was... to start winning elections again.
I get
because
it.
We hadn't been. But like at,
but no, but
now's,
I mean,
now's the time to recognize it and to
we've reached
declare
a moment
ourselves done with it.
Where they just took back our economic populism.
Right,
and we have
exactly.
to figure out
yeah.
if we can unify that movement under a more constructive banner.
We have to.
Because that's
if this is a group of people that are now choosing to be voting Republican, whether it's Donald Trump or otherwise, you guys, this is the reason why we're mad, and this is the reason why we think that it's time to point fingers. I've seen a lot of people saying that it's not time to point fingers right now. And if we don't point some fingers...
Well, we have a race in 2 years that we have to fucking get some
right. Because if we candidates have, into, we have, so... Because if we have lost these people who had been voting for us previously to candidates like Donald Trump, then we're toast for a while, guys.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound melodramatic about it, but it's real.
Yeah.
Like, if we are going to attempt to keep winning national elections by cobbling together... you know, groups of people who are, you know, feel on the outs, like that is just not, it's not going to remain a winning strategy.
No.
It will run its course. Yeah. And it may have already.
Yeah. Well, and it makes the progressivism goes together. You know, yeah, we're all yeah. cogs in the same dumb machine.
Yeah.
The only people who are benefiting from it are fucking rich people. Those rich people are that with the party, the Republicans were their party, and yep. they duped a lot of poor white people into voting for them sure by did. Stoking these racial resentments. And that's something that we know, like we can see that with our eyes. That's historically why poor white people have voted against their own economic interests time and again.
Yeah.
Have we always had the tools to win them back? Yes.
Yes.
Because they don't need the resentment if they're being offered the same sort of like, you know, pride and movement from the left. I mean, like they don't need the racism and the resentment is less powerful than money in their pocket.
Yeah.
And sort of like a feeling like they have control over their lives.
Totally.
You know, it is not unclear to me why a lot of Rust Belt America felt that they had no control over what was going on. And also this economic, you know, improvement that we've been having
right.
has not gone to them or See, us. It's gone only to people at the
and
top.
And that is one of the reasons why I feel like so many people didn't understand that this was going on, because they're looking at the unemployment rate and yeah. they're looking at, you know, they're looking at just sort of like how many jobs we've added in the last 8 years. And they're looking at just sort of like generally better economic numbers. But like these, the places that Trump won are places that have not had that recovery.
Yeah.
Just hasn't gone to them.
No.
They haven't seen it yet, which is part of the reason why they're so mad. They're not only just mad that it hasn't come to them, but they're mad that it has gone to others.
Yeah, well, they're mad that it's come and in general and they didn't see it.
Right, exactly.
And, yep. you know, I think a lot of us were mad about that. So totally. I think that is one of the reasons that we could have had these people yep. in our coalition. And once yep. they were in our coalition, we could have been talking to them about why racism and misogyny and hating gay people is a What's stupid wrong? Idea.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're not going to be able to do that when they won't talk to us.
I know, we don't have an in
We don't
now.
Have any leverage with them now. So yeah. The other thing that we need to stop doing to contribute to this is participating in fear politics. That was something that I faulted Hillary Clinton for a lot, because she voted for the Iraq War. I know that's an old talking point, but it's true. She's always been very aggressive in, you know, the all Middle East, in policy, all of her posture, foreign policy. Right. It's, you know, she has very sort of pugnacious foreign policy ideas. And that has contributed to the sort of fears of immigrants and the fears, you know, the fear of Mexican immigrants was rooted in job loss and NAFTA.
Yep.
The fear of Muslim Americans was rooted in foreign policy that she endorsed.
Yep.
So we as Democrats need to put a stop to that.
Yeah.
A lot of people I noticed this for an interesting reason, but I noticed this because, you know, I was there on 9/11. I have a 9/11 story that's fairly horrifying.
Yep.
And anytime that I talk about it with anyone who is from just like random town part of America, and in LA, yeah. there's actually a lot of people from random town part of America.
There are.
I often get a story back where the person sounds as if they thought their experience was as horrifying.
Right.
And that is not...
They, like, tell you what room of the house they right. were in when they
as
found
if,
out that it was happening.
As right, if, exactly. you know, running from the towers is equivalent to knowing that you were in the kitchen when you found out. Right. And, like, obviously that's hilarious. yeah. But it also means that the kind of fear that I was experiencing in New York was being experienced in other parts of the country. And the difference is that I had a reasonable expectation of... where this fear came from, what it encompassed, what right. I could expect to happen next, and they didn't. So
right.
if you were terrified and you lived in like a town I can't even pronounce in, yeah. or like a place that has the word farmer in it somewhere in, right. you know, a state that I can't find on a map.
Yeah.
And you were feeling as afraid as I was while I was going, you know, like three blocks from literally the World Trade Center on 9/11.
Trying to breathe.
Yeah. Like, then the fear that followed after that was directionless and scary. And when, you know, once we started going to war with the Middle East, only got worse. And you've been afraid for a long time.
Yeah.
Of literally nothing. You don't know what you're afraid of.
Yeah.
So there's just sort of this sense of anxiety and fear. Part of that is something that both parties were complicit in.
Totally.
And it's behind a lot of this prejudice that doesn't seem to have any purpose in the economic realm. And I'm not crazy. I understand that these prejudices take on lives of their own. So it's not just economic reasons that people are prejudiced against Black people. It's sort of beyond that now, because there's this whole social construct around it that has nothing to even do with the economy anymore. And it's just like a way of doing business in America. Like, I know, but in order to address all of these socially progressive issues that we talk about, we have to address the economic inequality.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that people feel safe enough to start thinking critically about their actions.
Yep.
And we can't sort of... We can't, as a party, abandon that concept if we want any of these other things to happen.
Yep.
So, in any case, by the way, do you think this is the end of the Christian conservatives?
I mean, I just don't know how you can consider to
where
continue
calling
your...
Where are the evangelical Christians going to go now?
I know.
Like, what's going to happen?
And you certainly can't... I mean, if they're going to continue to vote for people like Trump, I mean, you're just going to have to start calling yourself something different.
Yeah, because, fascists.
Exactly. I mean, I would contend that the Christian conservative movement has not been very Christian over the years already. But I mean, you certainly, if you voted for Trump, you certainly can't call yourself that any longer.
No, absolutely not.
You just can't.
Is it also the death of the Clinton Democrats? That's kind of what I'm hoping.
Sure as fuck hope it is. And we don't mean that just in the sense that there will not be another Clinton running for president in a while.
No.
We mean the type of Democrats that the Clintons
neoliberal
invented.
Democrats.
And if you think that they didn't, then you're just
wrong.
You're denying
wrong person,
actual
so
history
stop.
That the Clintons would tell you themselves if you asked them. We may not be entirely done with them, but we're done winning national elections if we continue to run them.
Yeah.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of people already sort of like prognosticating about 2020. And of course the most popular one is Michelle Obama, and bless her heart, she's like the queen of everything. I don't think she's probably the answer, even though she might win. I don't know that she's like,
but
that's
policy
it,
but, wise, I don't think this addresses the deeper problem.
And the
that
same
we're
with Cory
about.
Booker. And I love Cory Booker. He gave a great speech at the DNC. I think he's very charming, and he's going around and, you know, shoveling people's driveways in Jersey when there's a snowstorm.
He'll save
he's a corporate Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a big business guy. He sort of came on the national scene in that when he said on Meet the Press, when he disagreed with Obama that time, where Obama was in 2012, like, took all that flack for like saying like, you know, you didn't do this alone,
you
didn't build it or whatever. And like
it.
And Cory Booker was like really called out Obama, the president of his own party, for like not being like pro-businessy enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not a recipe for Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania wins in 2020.
No, and
so
also,
I think we really do need... Obviously, it's too early to start thinking about this. And
of course,
fact that people are even posting it is maddening to me anyway. That's the reason I wanted to address it, though, because it's like, we have to, like... If you're going to start throwing out random names on Facebook for people who are going to... You want to run in 2020, you better fucking know what you're doing. Because, like, both of those two people, while I love them, are the wrong answer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, that's...
So... Think about that. Before you start suggesting random names of random people to be president in 2020, think about what you're doing.
And the speculation starts early.
Sure does.
Hillary Clinton's speculation started way back in 2012.
Totally.
By 2013, we had formulated an opinion against her running that was pretty considered.
That we could post tomorrow and would feel like it was all
yesterday.
Of a sudden re-relevant.
I know, I reread it the other day. Not the other day, yesterday.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, fuck everyone. God damn it.
I know. I feel like we should print that out and frame it somewhere.
You're like, wallpaper our walls with it.
Should be our resume, really.
I know.
It should be.
It's like, there are some interesting times ahead. The one thing I want to leave us with is not that hopeful, but just a reminder to keep our wits about us. I was reading this article that was in the New York Review of Books by a reporter who has spent a lot of time reporting from Russia.
Mm.
And...
Who was apparently talking directly to the Donald Trump campaign, we found out in the last couple days.
I know, I heard that. Yeah, of course they were.
yeah.
But
anyway, sorry, go on.
I've been hearing a lot of things that are like, hopefully, maybe everything will be fine. Maybe he'll be okay. We don't know anything about him, and maybe it'll be fine. And maybe it will, and I have my fingers crossed, of course.
Sure.
There's one warning that begins this article, though, that I think is worth us just keeping in mind, which is when an autocrat says something, believe him.
Yep.
If Donald Trump says he's going to do something, he has not been playing a political game.
He did not.
He's changed his tune a lot, but
Right, exactly. But he did not move away from any of the ridiculous things he has said. He did not, you know, pivot to the middle once he got to a general election. I mean,
there is, just because it's shocking and horrifying, we shouldn't kind of get pulled into a false sense of complacency, like many of his supporters are, where we're sort of like, well, he must not mean any of it. It's too crazy.
Right.
When an autocrat says something, believe them.
Yes.
He says what he means.
And when you were...
He's not speaking in metaphors.
No, he's not. Exactly. And when you and I were talking about this earlier, you know, to that end, obviously some of the things that he has said are terrifying, and we hope that none of them ever do get done. But if you are going to assume that he is telling you the truth about some things, let's make sure he's telling the truth about some of the things that might not be so terrible.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he's got a lot of things in his platform that literally I understand why people are all of a sudden wanting to leave the country. Yeah. I get it. But, like, also, you know, he talked about helping inner cities. Granted, it was vague, and I don't know if I believe him. And condescending, but he said it.
Let's get some infrastructure spending up in here.
He said that in his acceptance speech the other night. He talked a lot about infrastructure spending. We should hold him to that. We should hold him to rewriting these crap trade deals.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are on the left and you're despondent right now, I get it. But also, let's make sure that he does some of the shit that he said he was going to do that might not be so terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that, and let's make sure that we stay vigilant about the stuff that is terrible. There's no reason he'd lie to us, you guys.
Right. Exactly.
He was literally speaking out of his ass constantly.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason not to think he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
But do something to make yourself feel better. Yeah. Contribute in some way. Yeah. We're going to, I think, at some point have to talk very specifically on this podcast about things that people can do from the political standpoint. Because this is the deal. We are not emotions people. We're not. No. I'm not going to feel better. But I mean,
we're actions people.
I am happy to go volunteer at a Planned Parenthood or whatever.
Yeah.
I also don't think that that's where I am most productive or most useful. Right. It is if there was literally an absence of a person who needed to help, you know, to hold someone's hand through an abortion, I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, think about where you're useful. Think about, you know, I want to change the direction of this electoral system that we're in. I want to work within the Democratic Party and outside of the Democratic Party to figure out how we can build a party that addresses the needs of this generation that's just coming up, because their priorities do not look like what we're seeing in Donald Trump's America.
Right.
And their priorities, they are used to being effective. They're well organized. They're civically engaged. And so I think that there is reason to believe that we can make forward progress when this is all over.
I mean,
I want to make sure that that the voices of people who actually will show up to vote find their way to candidates who can make them show up to vote. Yeah. You know,
I agree. And I think that while we are going to have to sort of really be in this together for the next 4 years, because there's every reason to think that it might be very hard to get through.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember that somewhere hidden in all of this, and it might be too early for some people to accept, but there's an opportunity in here.
Yes.
And we have to take it. We would be remiss not to take it. And we will continue losing elections if we don't take it. So do your mourning and do your whatever else it is that you think you need to do, but realize...
Unless it's committing a hate crime. Too many people are doing that.
But realize that if you don't get to the bottom of this and accept why it happened and figure out the best way to move forward, then we got problems.
Yeah. And
let's not have them.
We could have solutions.
We don't need to have them. We don't need to have the problems. Yeah. So that is, we're definitely going to be talking about that a lot.
Yeah.
As we're trying to figure it out too. I mean, we don't have the answers. If you have some ideas, please tell sure. us.
And if but in the I mean, meantime, it makes you feel great to donate to organizations that you suspect might be defunded under...
Do that.
Like, do all of that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That was the sort of most emotional moment that I actually had about this was I was talking to a friend of mine who works at the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center, and he was like, everybody is just totally despondent over here. Yeah. And I was like, I understood that just because I realized that like all of most of the people there are gay and lesbian and everything. And I was just like, right. yeah. And then he was like, yeah, I mean, if some of this shit goes down, then I mean, if he actually cut some of this funding and like, you know, he says that there are certain bills that he would get rid of and stuff. He was like, we would stand to, you know, lose $10 million. I mean, these are, yeah. this is an organization that makes sure that gay homeless youth have a place to live at night. And like exactly. that sort of like hit me. So do help. Do help those places. We're not saying to not do that. But like politically.
But think big too.
Think big. Right. Exactly. Yes.
Think big too.
Yeah.
And also make sure that you remember you have a state government. Remember that yeah. if you are fortunate enough to live in a state with a responsible yep. state government. I was looking at the New York Times. They had a feature about which states have moved left and which states have moved right in 2016.
Yeah.
There are only 8 states that moved left and California was one of them.
Praise be.
So I feel like, you know, if you have a strong state government, you certainly can contribute to helping that state government resist these forces.
Yeah.
That's another avenue for you. But it's time to start thinking real big, you guys.
Yep.
And I think that if I'm excited about the electorate of 20 years from now.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, we didn't show up in great numbers, but we certainly got it right.
Yeah. And I think that we could show up in great numbers totally. Because we are civically engaged
yes.
in a way that's not, I mean, I know young people it's hard to get young people to the polls. I understand all of that. But even young people who didn't come to the polls are part of a generation that is very civically engaged regardless,
yeah. Yeah.
that cares about social progress.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we can turn this into an opportunity of sorts.
Yeah.
In any case, those are our thoughts.
We'll be back. We're going to cover some like actual
some, news. Like actual things. News.
We'll tell you this all weekend. The terrible things about the Senate. We'll tell you some of the terrible things about the California
Right.
We don't have good news for you on Sunday. No. But we promise it'll be funny.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have more news.
Right.
All right. We'll talk to you in a few days. Right. Bye.